Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's Monday, April 30th, 2018, last day of the month. First 4 months of the year almost gone. Well, hey, there is a silver tsunami. Actually, there are two silver tsunamis getting ready to descend upon us. The one we talked about last week, which basically dealt with all of the baby boomers retiring, draining the Social Security pond and the Medicare pond, and basically leaving nothing for anyone, as well as public and private pensions. Oh, don't forget, email us, be part of the show, be part of the dialogue. The email address is kl@carrylutz.com. So the second silver tsunami has yet to join us, but who knows? It could be here shortly. And that's the one dealing with the shiny metal, as they call it. It used to be used in mirrors, but now that China makes all the mirrors in the world, of course, there's probably hardly any silver in those mirrors. It's probably just aluminum oxide, which is why those mirrors go bad in 2 or 3 years. Well, that's an aside, but here with us, since it's Monday, is John Rubino, dollarcollapse.com. Good morning, John.
Morning, Carrie. Yeah, that the silver tsunami thing is a little deceptive because it sounds like it's about silver the metal, but that is actually a name for the pension crisis that was coined by the San Francisco Chronicle a couple of weeks back to refer to all the silver hair that is deluging the public pension system and the private pension system right now. A lot of states and localities didn't fund their pensions sufficiently. And now they're kind of stuck with this wave of baby boomers coming who've been promised pretty nice retirements. And there's no money there to pay it. So that's on the verge of bankrupting a lot of cities and potentially a lot of states. You know, Illinois is this basket case. And so that's going to be front page news going forward and possibly the catalyst that sends the system into the next recession and maybe more than a recession. But the silver metal story is also really interesting because we just hit the Fed's target inflation rate today. That news came out this morning. So we're at 2% and accelerating. And that's the kind of environment that tends to be good for precious metals, because rising inflation, once it hits a certain point, it becomes news. You know, if it's at a 1.6% annual rate versus 1.7%, nobody really cares. But if it's 2.3% when the Fed's target is 2%, then all of a sudden we've got a public policy issue out there and a disturbing trend. And that's the kind of thing that attracts money to precious metals. So we'll see. You know, we'll see if the trend accelerates. There are suddenly spot labor shortages out there where certain sectors of the economy are having to pay way up to get workers. And that's leading to the prospect of wage inflation, which will feed into the whole, you know, commodities inflation thing that's going on right now. And if so, we've got the makings of a story that's really good for precious metals. And silver within the precious metals complex is especially interesting because it's so tiny. You know, there's just not that much silver out there. So if 1% of global investable capital flows into silver, forget it. You know, it would just take off. And that's a completely possible thing. You know, we saw what happened with Bitcoin over the past couple of years when it captured the imagination of people with some extra money. All of a sudden, Bitcoin went from $100 or $200 or whatever it was 2 years ago to almost 20,000. You know, you can see the same thing happen in something like silver if it captures people's imagination again, which it has done kind of periodically. You know, it's gone to $50 an ounce twice in our adult lifetimes, Carrie. So it would be easy to see something like that happen again when the numbers are all so much bigger now. You know, we've created the conditions in which inflation could really take off if the amount of borrowing that's going on out there doesn't slow down. You know, today we had also the savings rate be reported. And for something like 13 straight months,
it's down. Right.
It's down, and it's continuing to fall. Consumers continue to borrow money at a rate that allows them to keep spending faster than their incomes are growing. So every month, American consumers borrow more money, which is the same thing as saying their savings rate goes down. You know, they're not putting money away; they're borrowing money. That's also very inflationary. So you're seeing a lot of things go on out there that suddenly look like they might create an actual inflation problem, which we haven't had for a really long time. You know, we've been worried about deflation for such a long time. Like, this is new, and it's going to take a while for people's minds to shift from being worried about deflation to being worried about inflation. But once a trend like that happens, once a phase shift in people's perception happens, it takes a long time to shift it back. So that's a trend with legs when and if it starts.
Hey, well, here's a couple of comments got posted on YouTube that I know you'll want to address. One is from Joe. What happened to the Illinois bankruptcy that Rubino was talking of a few months ago? Silver was smacked down as usual. That's his comments.
Yeah, well, silver did get smacked down. And that is as usual. You know, that's kind of a pattern for the metals. They start to go up. It looks really exciting. And then they hit these resistance levels that have been there for a long time. You know, 1360 for gold has been there since 2014. It goes up, hits that level, gets smacked back down. So some of it is manipulation. Some of it is just that, you know, these markets are range bound right now. But once they pierce the upside resistance, then look out, you know, and that'll happen eventually.
Sure. So the Illinois bankruptcy.
The Illinois bankruptcy thing is coming. Yeah. You know, you can't say when it's going to happen, but these numbers are outrageous there. You know, Chicago is borrowing to fund their current pension plan expenses, which means they're piling more debt on top of an existing debt. And the numbers are already untenable. You know, they owe billions and billions of dollars to their cops and their firefighters and their teachers who are retiring in huge numbers right now. You know, hence the silver tsunami. You know, there are so many people with gray hair coming our way that we have to pay for, you know, and the money doesn't exist to do it. So that's the problem with Chicago and with Illinois. And, you know, the day of reckoning is probably not that far off just based on the numbers. We don't know when it's going to happen, but it's yet another thing that's out there waiting to happen. There are so many debt-related crises out there that you can't know which will be first, but there's a, you know, I think Chicago right now is the front runner. They're going to have some kind of a crisis, which will bleed over into Illinois in general because the state will have to bail out Chicago. And at that point, you've got a potential national crisis, because if, you know, Chicago can go and Illinois can go, then who else can? And you look around, you find out Kentucky can, New York can, California can, Connecticut certainly can, and New Jersey. You know, all of these guys are kind of on the same precipice that Chicago and Illinois are on. And that's a lot of money. Which the federal government will probably have to step in when these guys fail. So, you know, that's something to watch. It's something that's out there. And it has the feel of something that has been inevitable for a while and is becoming imminent.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, I think we need to clarify. You weren't saying 2 months ago when we discussed this that Illinois was on the absolute brink. It's just the situation continues to deteriorate. They're taking absolutely no action to cure the problem, to even come up with a solution, a long-term solution, their solution is borrow more money and effectively pay interest on interest. And that just isn't going to work. And they're hemmed in because the Illinois Supreme Court, and Illinois is like the most corrupt state, except for probably like Louisiana, Florida, and all the rest. But yeah, the judges said, no, it's in the state constitution. You cannot do anything that will diminish benefits for current and perhaps future recipients. So they're like left up the creek without a paddle, looking for temporary solutions, because then they have to go back and change the Constitution and end this madness. And none of them really want to do that, but that's what has to be done. And until they get real, nothing is going to change. Now, right now, John, one thing we have to note is there federal law, which is Chapter 8 of the bankruptcy laws, or Chapter 9, I think it's Chapter 8. Don't quote me on it, though. It's 8 or 9, deals with municipal bankruptcies. There's no provision in the bankruptcy code for a state to go bankrupt. So that is going to require an act of Congress to allow them to file for bankruptcy. And in all likelihood, it will be a prepackaged type bankruptcy, just screwing over a whole bunch of bondholders and really cutting the pensions, which Detroit had the opportunity to do it. They blew it. The one thing is that, as we discussed before, John, federal bankruptcy law trumps state constitutions, no pun intended. So the fact is that once that law gets passed, then they will be able to reconstruct all their pension plans in the bankruptcy courts. And I think if the state goes, probably dozens, if not hundreds, of cities, counties, and other governmental subdivisions, as they refer to them, will also wind up filing as well, because it's like, hey, we're not going to get hit that bad because the state's filing. We'll just pile on. And you'll have hundreds of municipalities all file there. And that could be the end of the municipal bond market, unless the federal government decides to bail them out, which, look, it's a blue state. Also, they're there because of their own incompetence, and you don't want to reward bad behavior, which is exactly what a federal bailout would be doing. You know, when you got these six-figure pensions, something's got to give here. It just can't go on this way.
Yeah. Well, speaking of muni bonds, that's why Illinois is imminent, because their bonds have been cut to one level above junk. Mm-hmm. And they've got a pretty aggressive borrowing schedule laid out ahead of them, because they have to borrow because they can't cover their day-to-day bills. And the rating agencies are warning them that if they keep on borrowing like this, they're going to be moved down to junk, which means their interest rate will go way up. They'll have to pay way up for future borrowing, which will send them into a death spiral. Because if you're, let's say you're paying 5% to borrow money, mm-hmm, and you're investing that money in your pension fund at 3 or 4% at best, you know, that's all you're going to get.
It's not a good deal. Not a good investment, is it?
No, that means you're using leverage in reverse. You know, instead of borrowing money to make more money, you're borrowing money to lose more money.
Right.
And at that point, you're kind of screwed. There's nothing left you can do And that will be Illinois' situation sometime in the next year, if not sooner, because they're going to borrow a lot of money in the face of these downgrade threats.
Yeah, they don't have a choice, which will further bring the downgrades on.
Yes. Yeah. And then once they drop into junk and go further into junk, forget it. You know, there's no way that you run a state that has big structural deficits with a junk bond credit rating. You know, you just can't do that. So Illinois will find out that they can't do it pretty soon. And then the rest of the muni market, like you said, is going to be affected by that. So it has nationwide consequences when one state blows up in the way Illinois looks like it's going to.
And explode it will. I mean, there's really nothing else you can do here. There's nothing else to be done. Is there? Do you see anything, any way for them to preserve this?
No, because one of the reasons people love muni bonds is they say that they have the full faith and credit, the taxing power of the state behind them, mm-hmm. which means, you know, you can, in theory, raise taxes to 100% on your people and use that money to pay off your muni bonds. Therefore, your muni bonds will never default.
Yeah.
But what that misses is that people don't have to live there and take that. You know, they can move somewhere else.
Oh,
and Illinois is seeing this huge exodus of people who are moving to Texas or Florida or wherever there's not an income tax because Illinois taxes are going up so much. So that's a, you know, very limited tool, the taxation power of the state, because mm-hmm. people can vote with their feet and just bail on you.
Exactly. And that's such a great point, because what's really going to drive them over the edge is the new tax bill. That's death for these blue states and these really high tax jurisdictions. And there's just an article in a couple of papers. It was picking it up. I don't know if it's true or not. I mean, well, we don't really know if it's going to happen, but it certainly appears, and I certainly was calling on it to happen. 800,000 people are going to move from blue states or high tax states, and they're not all blue states. All the high tax states, most of them are, but not all. And they're going to move to red states. And you know, like I read in LA when I was there, that the tax bill is costing the taxpayers of California $12 billion more in federal taxes. That's because largely because of the elimination or massive reduction of the state and local tax deduction, which you could write off 100% before, and now that's been cut down, plus a reduction of the mortgage deduction for high cost homes. So it's exactly what we were predicting and exactly what we thought was going to happen. It's happening here. It's really happening here, John.
Yeah, it does seem to be. You know, the tax bill was in part a political document where the Republicans picked on the Democrats, you know, because houses are most expensive in left-leaning states, you know, the blue mm-hmm. states.
Yeah.
And taxes are also the highest there. So you take away the deduction for those two things and you make living in those states a lot less doable for a lot of people. And population flows are kind of bearing that out. You know, more and more people are leaving California, New York, and Illinois and moving to places that have traditionally been red states, you know, Republican-leaning
exactly.
states. But of course, that homogenizes everything, right? If you send a bunch of Californians to Texas, then all of a sudden Texas becomes a swing state politically. So I don't know whether that works for everybody.
I don't know about that. You know, like certainly on one level you would think so, and you've seen it happen places like New Hampshire, which was as red as, you know, as red as a communist baby's diaper, and now it's purple. So hard to know, but I do think that it's starting to dawn on these people. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe they are totally hopeless and total morons. But you got to understand at some point, this thing, you know, you're just basically killing the goose that lays the golden egg, right?
Yeah. You know, there's a limit to how big government can be and how much it can do, because somehow it has to be paid for. And the pressure to pay for it tends to offset the benefits from whatever government happens to be doing. And you know, you reach a level at which the results turn negative. And that's where we are with a lot of states.
That's called,
and with a lot of central governments around the world.
In economics, they call that the law of diminishing returns. And the returns are definitely diminishing. And that's what everyone's scared to death about. They don't really know what the heck to do here, John, do they?
Well, no, because it's very hard to walk back big, expensive government programs once you've created them. So the pressure becomes to raise taxes to fund them. But then that has so many negative consequences that everything breaks down eventually. That's kind of how governments go cyclically. You know, they grow and they grow and they grow until their growth becomes the problem. And then there's a huge crisis, which sets everything back. You kind of have a die-off of government programs. And we're heading into that stage of the process now. You know, it doesn't work anymore. So the question is, will it be, you know, a fiscal thing where everybody goes broke and things get cut back because nobody can pay for them? Or will we have a currency crisis in which we devalue the world's fiat currencies really aggressively and in that way cut back the real value and the real cost of government programs? In other words, we'll stiff the recipients of government programs either way, but there are different ways to do it. Now, I suspect that we're going to do the currency devaluation solution this time around, where we just one day, you know, we do a mass monetary reset in which the major fiat currencies are devalued versus gold or something like that. And everybody is still getting the same checks from the government, but the checks are worth half as much. And in that way, we make it sustainable again.
Worth less. The checks are worth less. Not worthless, but worth less.
Worth less.
Keep that in mind. Although to many of you out there, when you're living on half of what you expected to get in terms of purchasing power, to you, it might very well feel like those checks are worth less or really worthless, right?
Yeah, and that's what it's going to be, too. You'll get your Social Security check, but you'll be able to buy only half as much with it as you could in the month before the monetary reset.
Yeah.
So, it's not clear we can do that without serious civil unrest, because baby boomers have never put up with anybody messing with them. You know, we're a very selfish generation.
Yeah.
And the idea that the government is going to find a way to cut our Medicare in half or our Social Security payments in half, that won't go down well with a lot of people. So, you know, it might be interesting. We might have civil unrest coming from seniors, a different kind of silver tsunami.
Yeah.
A wave of silver hair out in the street.
Yeah. And, you know, Trump specifically ran on not cutting back those entitlements to the middle class. So where does that leave us, John?
Well, the government is going to say, we didn't cut your entitlements. Look, you've got the same check as before.
Dummy.
And, you know, the financially illiterate will buy that. But I don't think that many people are going to be financially illiterate at that point. They're going to understand that their check, while it's the same nominal number, is only half as valuable as the previous check. They're going to get that. They're going to be mad.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing how bankruptcy can really increase your financial education rather quickly, right?
Yes. And that's what we have to hope, that thanks to the internet and thanks to people's sudden interest in the subject, we have a national discussion about this stuff. You know, what is money? and what role should it play in the financial system in our lives? And hopefully we conclude that money should be sound. In other words, it should be something that exists independent of the government, and its value shouldn't change, you know, and shouldn't be able to be manipulated for election cycles and wars and corporate earnings cycles. You know, we shouldn't be able to inflate our way out of problems. And because we can't inflate our way out, we won't cause the problems in the first place. That's the theory. You know, we'll go back to constitutionally mandated sound money. But I would say that's a 30% probability at best.
Hey, you're preaching to the choir, John. And that's one of the comments we got a lot of, is like, he's a broken record. You know, you're a broken record. You just keep saying the same thing over and over again. And I'd like to think we add a little to it, because the situation is fluid. They've managed to hold it off this long, but you got to wonder, how long can they really hold off for?
Well, you know, Kerry, the whole broken record thing is a frustration, because this has taken way longer than it should have.
Yeah.
And that means that you either have to stop talking or kind of repeat yourself in this space, you know, in the sound money, precious metals, limited government kind of intellectual space. And yeah, I'm kind of tired of saying the same things over and over again.
Yeah, so, well, you'll get to say things differently very quickly, promise you that. No question.
Well, that's the nature of bubbles. You know, they go on so long that if you're a critic of the bubble, you really get tired of hearing yourself talk about it, and people get tired of hearing you talk about it. But then the bubble bursts, and all of a sudden, it's fun again. You know, it's fun to talk about this stuff again. So hopefully that time will come soon, and it won't be too painful for too many people.
But it probably will be I'm all for a stop clock, because even a stop clock could do better than what our government's doing for you now. In any event, time to take off. We'll see you next week, John. Make sure you check out John's work, dollarcollapse.com and financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Both have a free newsletter. I might even write a letter write an article this week. I'm in the process of it now, but the newsletter will be out tomorrow. Hey, check us out. Again, email, be part of the conversation, kl@carrielutz.com, and the Twitter feed's @CarrieLutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. We got so many more. We got like 5,000 YouTube followers here, John. So on there, just click the subscribe button, click the bell, so you'll get notification of a new show going up. And go over to iTunes as well. You can set that up so you subscribe to the show. Just type in the search box for the iTunes store, Carrie Lutz, Financial Survival Network, or some combination thereof. And then when it comes up, click subscribe and keep clicking subscribe until it actually does. Then the show gets delivered to your computer automatically to the iTunes app, and I think you even get a notification. We've got some apps, custom-made apps, putting the finishing touches on it now. John, it's going to be a major, major cluster, you know what, for probably after the summer, third quarter, onto the second quarter of 2019. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's going to be dramatic. I know that. So, John, we'll catch up with you next week and enjoy the ride ahead.
Thanks, Gary. See ya.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.